Coming to you from Silicon Valley, I'm Marcus Edwards, and I'm on the hunt for recruiting leaders, producers, innovators, and pioneers who've made their mark on the industry and can't wait to share their points of view. We'll tackle the tough topics and dig deep to find the answers you're looking for and some actionable advice you can take to the bank. So stick around and stay tuned, and welcome to Recruiting Trailblazers. Hey, it's Marcus here. Just a quick note before you start listening to this interview. We recorded this conversation before the Black Lives Matter movement took off, which explains its conspicuous absence from our conversation. It certainly is a topic that I will be addressing with my future guests. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy it. Cheers. Okay, I'm very excited to welcome my guest today to Recruiting Trailblazers, Julie Kakulis. She has spent the last 20 years working in human resources and talent acquisition, mostly in software and video games companies. And most recently, she was the global head of talent acquisition at Glassdoor, a company that obviously needs no introduction, prior to which she was the director of TA at Machine Zone, which you may know is a hugely successful mobile game studio. Julie runs marathons, loves film and TV, and I'm willing to bet she's probably watched season 3 of Ozark. Hi, Julie.
Hello. Thank you for having me, and I absolutely have watched season 3 of Ozark.
It seems to be that everybody I know has watched Ozark and absolutely loved it, and I'm on the hunt for my next big series. So got any tips?
Killing Eve is really awesome. It's on right now. So excellent. Good. If you haven't watched Handmaid's Tale, if you can't tell, I like things slightly dark.
Yeah, absolutely. I did just watch Ricky Gervais's Afterlife, which was very easy to watch. It's 20-minute episodes, and I think there's 2 or 3 seasons, and it was fantastic.
I love him. And by the way, Ricky Gervais was probably the thing that got me excited the most about podcasts. His podcast was so great way back in the day. So funny to bring it all full circle.
Do you know whether he's still podcasting?
I do not know that, actually.
He's just a naturally incredibly funny individual. So I'll have to check that out. So here's the funny thing about me and you. We haven't been friends, but we've known of each other for about 15 years. In fact, since you were back at LucasArts. Mm-hmm. And you've remained very good friends with one of my best friends, AJ.
Yes, I have. And I've worked with him a couple of times directly.
Yeah. So this is the first time we've sort of been face to face, so to speak, for a very long time. Back in the day, you know, AJ and I used to service Activision, where you also spent some time, and LucasArts very successfully in the video games industry. So anyway, it's great to have you on. Let's get straight into this. Let's get straight into the main topic that everybody's thinking about, which is quarantine. How have you been handling it at home with a family, the ups and downs? You know, what's been going on?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm thankful that I'm home with my family. So I have 2 children who are in elementary school, and my husband. We're all home together. I immediately set up shop on the other side of the house from my husband so that we could sort of be separate during the day and then come together at various times during the day. But it's been fun. We've been trying to take it as an adventure. It's obviously very scary, and we're certainly doing shelter in place and being very careful, but we're just trying to stay as positive as we can during all of this.
Yeah. Do you think social distancing is here to stay for a long time?
I think it's going to be a while. I think, you know, we've even seen the county of Lassen was like the first one in California to open up and now is closed again because they got some cases, and we're just going to have to wait and see.
What have you been doing? I know you're a runner. In fact, I know you've run a couple of marathons. What have you been doing to stay in shape?
You know, what's really funny is I had bought a stationary bicycle a while back, and it sat in the corner for probably a year. And when the pandemic happened, Peloton offered up their app for 90 days for free. And so I started using the app religiously about a month ago. And it's been so much fun to cycle at home. I've been doing it about 5 days a week on average. And yesterday, I finally bought a Peloton, which is not going to arrive until September, but that's okay. I have my bike and, you know, my bike shoes and clip-ins and all of that good stuff. So that's what I've been doing with myself for the most part.
That's fantastic. Now, there's a company that's actually really gained a lot of new business, I understand, is in fact doing extremely well. I'm a spinning instructor, but obviously I'm not spinning instructing at the moment because all the gyms are closed, and we'll see where that goes. It's probably going to be quite a while before they reopen gyms safely.
Yes, yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. So I personally have been doing a lot of outdoor riding, safe as I can, early in the morning, staying away from people, wearing a mask, all the good stuff. So let's start talking about your most recent venture at Glassdoor. I know that Glassdoor was one of the first companies to go remote. You know, how did that go down?
Yeah, it was really interesting. We were very proud of our company for being one of the first ones. I mean, I think a couple of companies had said that they were going to try and do a day or so. I think Facebook and Salesforce had talked about it at the time. It was, what was it, like mid-February? All the days run together now. And we decided that we were going to send everyone home. So we gave them a couple of days to kind of clear everything up and close up shop, but they could also go home immediately. In terms of recruiting, it was really interesting. We had one day, we decided one day was too fast to cancel all the interviews and make everybody be at home on Zoom. But within a day, we had everything rescheduled globally. All of the interviews went remote. And we had communications, you know, because we're Glassdoor, we have a great relationship with marketing and they have a wonderful blog that they have for employers and job seekers. And we were able to use some of their communications as well and vice versa, right? We shared during that exercise, but it was pretty cool to see everything go virtual very, very quickly.
And I mean, you're the global head of talent acquisition. How big was your team when quarantine started?
My team was 22, including myself, globally. And we had people in four locations within EMEA and the US.
We'll get to sort of reveal how the story has continued, but how prepared do you think everybody was to make that transition quickly? And, you know, how hard did it become to do your job as the leader of that team?
Well, it was interesting, and I won't take credit for this. One of the managers on the team, James Parker, had started this mantra with his team about a quarterback, which was basically that anything that happens, you should be able to handle. So any manager comes to you with any question, any candidate has a problem, anything that happens, we can problem solve against that. And then COVID happened. So I feel like our team sort of rallied behind that mantra and was really able to move forward with COVID and being virtual. It wasn't very long before our recs got put on hold. So that was one of the things that happened very immediately after COVID. It was probably within the first 2 weeks, we had all the recs put on hold. And so that was another interesting challenge to deal with and figuring out what we were going to do there.
Recruiting is definitely something that can be done very effectively from home. Do you believe that there are people who can work from home and people who can't? Or do you think that's a leadership issue?
No, I think that there are definitely, you know, there's all different types of people. Everybody has their own work styles, and some people really just feed off the energy of having others there. Even James, as I was mentioning, he's probably one of the biggest go-getters on the team. And he said, there's just something about the structure of the day, right? Going to the gym and working out and then coming to the office and getting your coffee and talking to people a little bit and then really rallying into your day. It sort of changes. And then there's some people, which I would include myself in, that have a different energy at home and really enjoy that. I'm both introverted and extroverted. So I sort of like being holed up at home. I also think that, you know, most of our job is done on the phone as we are today, right? I love being on the phone. And so it's very, very natural to be remote for me. But then there are also, you know, and we started learning this with our employee base is that people have different situations. People have roommates, people don't have a quiet space, people have children at home once they came home from school. It's really, really been interesting.
I think that is the biggest challenge for everybody is environmentally what they have to deal with. Even if you have got a room, but you've got children knocking on the door, there's a lot of challenges that you have to face. There's no doubt that the office brings that sort of structure into place quite easily and allows you to sort of flow through the day a lot easier. But I don't know, I've actually quite enjoyed this period of time because it's actually led to a completely different way for me to communicate with people. Have you found yourself talking to people in a more personal way or in a more enlightening fashion?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I mean, we definitely all are working at finding new ways to communicate with each other, especially being a manager during COVID and trying to figure out ways to engage with folks, not in a "are you working" type of way, but more in a "let's connect, let me make sure that you still feel connected and part of the team." But I had this example of one of the recruiters on my team who is based in San Francisco, and there wasn't a big team in San Francisco. There was a much bigger team in Chicago or Mill Valley. And what she loved about the experience is that she was now on an equal playing field. We're on a Zoom call, and we've all been on these Zoom calls where there's like 9, 12 people on the screen. Each person gets their box. Now she's lined up right along with everyone else, right? And so she felt like it was more engaging and more inclusive to be in this environment.
That's interesting. How do you manage productivity when people are working remotely? Do you use the same set of metrics that you use when they're in the office?
Yeah, and we don't, I've never wanted to be managed by like the number of calls. I have in the past and I hated it, but I haven't wanted to be managed by the number of calls or the amount of activity that I have up front. It's always the activity on the back end, right? Am I meeting my goals? Am I getting my hires? Those types of things. And so it doesn't really change that much. You still have the same goals, right? Obviously, our goals changed because our recs got put on hold. But in a world where we were remote with a normal rec load, it would sort of be the same set of goals. What was really, really interesting during COVID, and you know, for any of those other TA leaders who have had recs put on hold and trying to figure out what to do with your teams and keeping them employed is we started a huge project list of things that we could do to help push us further as a TA team, to help Glassdoor, to help job seekers and employers. And so it was a really, really cool exercise to see the team rally behind adding value and continuing to move the company forward even during all of this.
What did that look like? I mean, what kind of exercise was it?
So some of the really fun things were, there were some bite-sized videos that the team put together for job seekers. And we partnered with a company called Altru Labs to put out videos on our careers page. And so they put together some videos about interviewing remotely and, you know, what it's like to be looking for a job during a time like this. What was really fun is that one of our writers on the marketing team actually wrote an article and embedded some of those videos in the article that was pushed out on the Glassdoor blog. We did some work with our learning and development team and helping them build trainings. We already had this in place, but we had 5 big project teams that we worked on within talent acquisition to get people excited about the work that we do. And so obviously those got ramped up, and that includes employer brand and candidate experience, interview training, some things like that that we were already working on.
That's interesting. And you touched on the metrics thing. I've been rallying against the concept of activity metrics for years. And I've even recently come across companies, agencies that still use the phone metric to measure people's productivity, which to me is completely ludicrous. And I think that we're way past the point of time where we should all be able to measure our team members' productivity, you know, without asking them questions about how many phone calls or how many emails it took to get there. The net result is what really matters. Does it really matter how you get there if you're producing the goods and making it happen in a way that's acceptable or better for your employer? I don't think so.
I don't think so. And I definitely still hear people, especially on the agency side, talking about making 100 calls a day. And I have been in environments where I've had to make 100 calls a day. And that is not what I enjoy. But I also don't enjoy receiving cold calls. And I actually don't answer my phone these days unless I know who it is that's calling me. So it's really interesting. I actually really, really fundamentally believe that recruiters each have their own style and it should be fostered, because your sweet sauce, your special sauce is what is going to get you that hire. And it's all different. So I'm not going to make 100 cold calls, but I will make my hires, right?
Yep. I used to be a really good cold caller, and I grew up obviously in the UK, and I started in the recruitment industry and just cold called all day long and was quite good at it and got lots of results. But I feel uncomfortable these days phoning somebody without them knowing who I am. I mean, I'm always looking for an introduction or a referral or some way to connect the dots before I reach out to somebody cold. And I think that's become the new normal. In fact, the new normal is booking, you know, a half an hour call with people. People don't seem to want to be interrupted anymore. So my point is, even if you do cold call all day long, and even if you do get a few people to pick up, is it really going to be a meaningful conversation? Because they're on their back foot. They're like, well, you know, I'm kind of busy. And who did you say you were with again? And you know, I'm not sure if it even works anymore. And I'm surprised to hear myself say that after all these years, but it seems to be that the new normal is getting to agree a time to have a conversation with somebody that's mutually agreeable or beneficial.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So we're always looking at new tools and technologies that we can use, especially I'm always looking at ways that you can make recruiters days more efficient. And so we are looking over the last year at a cool technology that involved text messaging. And one of our recruiters immediately came forward and said, "Oh, that's awful. I do not want to cold text people." Right. But that was never my intention with it. Although it could be used for that, our intention was you're in process with someone, you want to get your interview scheduled. Let's look at texting as a way to do that, because you've already connected and agreed that you want to participate in this process, but you don't want to wait a day to be able to respond to the email, to give times and things like that. So, but it's really interesting because you can still use these newer technologies for that type of work, right? Instead of 100 cold calls, it's 100 text messages. But that would give me a lot of distaste.
Yeah, I think cold texting is, I mean, it's probably more effective than cold calling, but still, I'd say the upside would be fairly limited. But once you're in process with somebody, yeah, the fastest way to get a response is definitely through text. A lot of people don't read their email all day, every day anymore.
Right, absolutely.
Most recruiters are spending too much time on LinkedIn. And we'll get into LinkedIn a little bit later as well. The Glassdoor story continues because it's impacted you and your team. And so let's talk a little bit about what's happened since quarantine started.
Yeah. So we unfortunately were affected at Glassdoor. We tried to hold on, as many companies do, for as long as possible. But in early May, we announced that nearly 30% of the company would be affected. And another group of those folks were offered roles at our sister company, Indeed, which was really wonderful, especially a lot of our people in Europe were offered roles there at Indeed. But part of those layoffs, the majority of it was within our sales organization, but our team was affected pretty largely. And so as part of that exercise and sort of figuring out what the structure of our team would be going forward, I ended up volunteering myself. So I personally have been impacted by COVID, and only by COVID, because this would not have happened at Glassdoor or with our TA team, which was highly, highly respected, if it weren't for COVID.
Wow. So you are actually now personally considering your next role, yeah?
I am. I actually, when I was having this conversation with my boss, I thought that it would make the most sense given my team size would go down so significantly and the recruiting would slow down for a bit anyway that my managers were able to take over. And so thankfully, all my managers were saved and are able to run that. They are currently running the team at Glassdoor and will be able to rebuild and do something really fun. And yes, while I am trying to take some time off, which is why haven't really been talking about not having a job. I am entertaining some things at the moment.
Excellent. You know, I wanted to talk about Glassdoor for a second, if you don't mind, because I've always thought, and this might be slightly controversial, that it's a little bit unfair that people can leave anonymous reviews with no consequences. Is it really a level playing field, the Glassdoor platform?
Yeah, it's so interesting because Glassdoor is very polarizing, I find. When I go to speak to other HR leaders or TA leaders, they either love it or they hate it, right? But feedback is everything. You can't buy a shirt without reading the reviews, right? I certainly wouldn't have bought my Peloton without hearing what other people think about it. And it's part of what we do as HR leaders, as well as collect employee surveys regularly to hear what's going on. I like to tell a couple of stories about Glassdoor, but one of them is specifically about reviews. Because I told everyone I get as much feedback as everyone else does at Glassdoor because all of our people know that we want reviews regularly. But when I was interviewing at Glassdoor, and I had worked at a couple of companies that did not have the best reputation on Glassdoor, and some of the leaders in those companies hated Glassdoor, to be frank, I read the reviews of the TA team. I figured it was sort of required reading I was going through the interview process. And what I read there wasn't pretty. They hadn't had a leader in a while. There was a bunch of attrition of the recruiting team, didn't really feel especially stable. And when I looked at those reviews and read those reviews, I read rebuild mode.
Yeah,
which is
opportunity,
which is what I love. That's what I love. That's what I've done before. And I knew that I could be successful rebuilding the team into a really highly performing team. And that is exactly what happened. So when people tell me that they hate the bad reviews, it's just a data point. It's just a day in time, right? That thing is happening and that person had that experience. The important part is to know that those reviews could help you pull the right people into the right role, which I think was certainly the case with me going to Glassdoor and rebuilding the team into something highly respected.
I definitely think it represents opportunity, but from where I sit, and as you know, I've been recruiting in the TA field for a few years now, it sometimes causes us problems when the company that we're pitching or the opportunity that we're pitching to our candidate has bad Glassdoor reviews because they look at it from a recruiting perspective and say, well, it's going to be harder for me to recruit for this company because they've got 2.9 average score on their Glassdoor. And so that sometimes really hurts us when we're pitching what we think is a great opportunity and maybe an opportunity like the one you had when you entered Glassdoor, a rebuild opportunity. Is it actually possible for a company to repair their Glassdoor reviews by engaging with Glassdoor as a paying client?
Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily say that you have to pay for Glassdoor, and please pay for Glassdoor, but I wouldn't say that you have to pay for Glassdoor to be able to rebuild your score and your reputation within Glassdoor. I think that in my experience, when I've seen reviews come out, especially reviews that are scathing, there's usually something in there that's accurate, that's really happening. And I think just like Blind, right? Blind is another really great example of a company that's kind of booming right now with all of the Blind feedback. And it's a really good opportunity to listen to it and make changes because it will adjust over time. The poor reviews will slow down and the positive reviews will keep going. And you can also, you know, reach out to, and this is Glassdoor best practice, is you can reach out to your employees at other times, right? You can reach out during the interview process, when they've just been hired. On anniversary dates are a really good time to reach out to your employees and get those employees, or when they're promoted, get them talking about the positive things that happen in the company. Because as you've seen with Yelp as an example, a lot of times when people have a bad experience, they're really keen to go out and write a review right in that moment when they're feeling hot, right? And they don't necessarily give they might give a one when really like a three or a four was more relevant to that experience. But you want those people that are feeling super positive to also be thinking about going out and writing reviews.
Yeah. I mean, let's say you get fired. I mean, that's a bad day for anybody. And let's say you get fired for good reason. You're still going to be angry and remorseful and upset. And you're probably going to write a nasty Glassdoor review that day as well. So those ones are impossible to dodge as well.
There's really nothing you can do about that. And I think the readers understand, right? Readers can tell when something like that's happening. But there's another really interesting story that happened while I was at Glassdoor, which was one of our teams, and I won't name the team, but one of our teams was in a bit of turmoil and we were feeling it. Just like you mentioned, our recruiting team was trying to recruit for that team and there was a ton of attrition, bad reviews. And we started pulling that in, that the feedback that we were hearing to the exec team, like, take a look at these reviews, listen to what the candidates are saying. You know, this is what we see ourselves within the team. And they realized quickly that a new leader needed to be brought in. So they ended up working to have the old leader leave. And we ended up bringing in a whole new team. That team is really, really operating well today. And I think it's really the reviews and then being on the front lines, our recruiters being on the front lines to really bring that forward.
And that's very positive as well, because I won't say that I've been a hater. I've just always been, I've sat on the fence regarding Glassdoor because of the anonymity. But I mean, those are great points that you make. And so I think you've cleared up a few things about Glassdoor that I didn't understand.
When I was, I'll just add one more thing. So when I was interviewing for my last company, my old boss was doing a training, and part of the training, just a tiny little thing at the end, was I call Glassdoor the bathroom door. And I was like, oh my goodness, what is she going to say when she hears where I'm going? But it was really, really interesting and enlightening for me to work for Glassdoor and learn everything that Glassdoor does in terms of transparency. And really, I mean, the mission of the company, it's a recruiting company, first of all. The mission of the company is to help people everywhere find a company and a job they love, which has literally been my career mission. And so it's, I think that there are definitely some things that rub people the wrong way. But the fact that you can get real transparency into a company to figure out if it's right for you is something that's so powerful. So I will always have love for Glassdoor and for the transparency that they bring.
That's great. And again, as a recruiter of recruiters, I have a lot of conversations with people about culture. And in fact, I would say culture, and it's a big word because it encompasses so many different aspects of a job. But the culture of a company for me is the number one driver of movement within the industry for recruiters, and I'm sure for everybody else as well. And money's up there and location is up there. But I'd say culture is the number one reason why people leave and join other companies. So the better you can do in projecting a positive culture, in fact, the better you can do in owning a positive culture, means you're going to have a crack at some of the best people out there. And I've always said to my clients that my candidates are looking for four things in a culture. They're looking for a company that can inspire, develop, empower, and appreciate them. And if those four things are in place, then you've got an incredibly positive culture and you've got a great chance at hiring the very best people on the market. What do you think?
I love that. I love that. We were working on that. And it's funny because we actually had gotten some employee survey data on our team about a year and a half ago. And there were a couple of bits in there that I didn't love, which was the team didn't necessarily feel the love is basically how I interpreted it. Like they felt like they had a job to do and we were very driven and there were some things that were very positive, but they wanted to feel that appreciation and love. And so we worked really hard to bring that in and sort of instill that into our team and give them a sense of love, a sense of ownership, a sense of direction, adding to their skill sets. And I would say that one of the biggest things for me was when all of our recs went on hold, and most recruiters freak out when all the recs get put on hold because it's we generally see it first, no one wanted to leave. There was no one who was out there interviewing who quit their job. I mean, obviously these things happen to us, but I thought that our culture was so great and our team was so full of love and empowerment and had such a strong mission that they were all just very, very together in it.
That's great. And it's funny how companies have pivoted and really make an enormous effort these days to build a better mousetrap for great employees, because that certainly wasn't the case when I started working. And I'm not that old, but you know, back in the day in the agency business, you were lucky to get the job and then you did what you were told and made as many phone calls as you were told to make. So now, you know, the responsibilities have sort of, the playing field has been leveled. So employers seem to do, for the most part, a much better job of providing a great workplace, you know, a positive culture, strong leadership, training, et cetera, empowerment. But that doesn't mean that the employees can just come in and just take it easy, right? So what is it that you think in our industry and you as a leader of recruiters, what are the one or two things that you think are absolutely critical today to be a really successful recruiter?
Yeah, so I always go towards partnership. And I think that it takes a few different characteristics to really be a true partner to the business. But I think that I've been very, very lucky that I've always been on the front lines with my hiring teams and hiring leaders, and I've been closer to them than sometimes the people business partners, which is, I would say, a role that's really appeared in the last decade and does have a strategic ownership of the business. But I've been very lucky to sit closely with my teams. Partly it's because of curiosity. And I will go in, and my teams today do this, go in and really, really learn and understand the business, sit side by side and be embedded with the teams. At Glassdoor, we participated in our annual hack, and our TA team was the first time that in 11 years of hacks that recruiters ever wanted to participate. And we were in a recruiting company. And so really being that partner and really being aligned with the business is super, super important. So I think curiosity, cross-functional relationships, realizing that it's not just about filling roles, right? You can be a contract recruiter if you want to just fill roles, right? Just come in for a year, fill some roles and leave. Right? That's not what people want these days. People want someone who's going to sit right by them, understand their business, push back, really, really help them to build their teams.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I've always, as a recruiter, I've always found that sitting down with a client as an agency recruiter and asking them questions about what business problems they're solving and what drives the needs of their business is a much more positive and powerful conversation to have than what roles do you need filling right now. And so really getting to understand and own how the business operates, what drives the business, and what problems it's solving is just a better way of looking at the industry that we're in. And from there, you can really begin to sell those roles as a part of the organization, of a fully functioning organization, rather than just selling the attributes of a particular role. And so I think that's a very important point for recruiters, any recruiters who are listening this, to understand.
Yeah, absolutely. It also makes the role more interesting. I mean, honestly, recruiting, and you and I have been doing it for a long time, right? It's very rinse and repeat. You have, like, it's a new role and you're, maybe it's a new hiring manager that you're working with, but all of the steps are the same and it becomes very monotonous and boring unless you add something interesting to it. And I think that partnership, that pushback, that like just really sitting and learning the business, it makes it so much more interesting.
Yeah. Let's talk about agency recruitment just for a few minutes, because I know you've got lots of friends in agency recruiting. You've been an agency recruiter. Agency recruiting, I can tell you from firsthand experience, is if it's not on its knees, it's suffering greatly right now because of COVID, for obvious reasons. Okay, everybody's take Glassdoor. They've laid off some recruiters. They're revamping. They're trying to understand what growth is going to look like. The last thing they need to do right now is talk to an agency about hiring more people, when in fact, the next thing that they will do is probably rebuild their own internal recruiting functions. So talk to me a little bit about how you feel about agency recruitment right now and what the future holds for them.
It's so interesting. I think that there is absolutely a need for agency recruiting, whether it's exec search or RPO or even contingency recruiting. But I feel like it might be a really good time to evolve how that works. And I'll give you an example from Glassdoor. So in our G&A area, and I'll pick on finance. I love to pick on finance a little bit. They're my friends. I adore them. But they think that finance roles should only be given to agencies and not recruited internally, right? All the great finance people go to agencies and only want to work with agencies. So developing a list of go-to agencies was really, really important for us in G&A so that we could have that credibility with our teams. We could turn it on if we needed it. Of course, we always filled the roles ourselves first. Shout out to Bree. But that was really important. So we started building that list, but it's hard. It's hard to know. I mean, you mentioned you and I have known each other a really long time. We have some other agencies that I adore, agency owners or recruiters that I always take with me. But if you don't have those relationships, how do you know if anyone's any good? And so I've been thinking about it a little bit of how do we approach that? How do you make sure that your list is the right list, your go-to people are the right people? I feel like there has to be something like a marketplace created where potentially you add a layer of like a LinkedIn for agencies, right? Where you have people make recommendations or even like a Glassdoor give reviews of different agencies so that people like me know who to go to, who's the best, who's going to service this role.
Don't look now, Julie, but you've just come up with a pretty damn good business idea.
You can have it.
It's a very interesting point because there's two types of agencies. There's the big Robert Harves and K-Forces and Insight Globals, and they do a lot of contract and a lot of perm recruitment. And it's, as you said earlier, it's very rinse and repeat. It's very transactional. You know, they have these huge call centers just calling thousands of candidates a day. And then you have the smaller players like me and like our friend AJ and like our friend Matt Allen, who run boutique agencies that operate very effectively inside sometimes very narrow verticals. But for me, I would rather work with a smaller player inside a narrow vertical who really understands that space and who's really a subject matter expert in that space than I would with any number of transactional recruiters who just make 1,000 calls a week. How do you feel?
Absolutely. I would say when I started working with you and AJ at LucasArts, one of my favorite things about you guys and the reason that I kept taking with me to other places is that there's value add. And that's what I always believe that agency recruiters should have as a value add. It's not just that I found this resume. It's not just that I got this person's attention and gave them to you. It's that I helped you do the deal. I helped you sell the person. I helped on the back end, right? To get the person super excited, learn everything that's going on with that person. It's almost like you guys took contingency recruiting to an exec search level, right? And I know that you've evolved naturally to that place. But that's what I would hope for in a contingency recruiter, because it's a lot of money, right? Especially since I can hire a full-time person for what, like 3-4 contingency hires. I can hire my own full-time person who can hire 30 people instead of 4, right?
You can. And of course, as an agency recruiter, my value proposition, if I get the chance to pitch it to you, is going to be very different than a younger in-house recruiter, maybe with a few years experience, because of all the relationships that I have, of my approach to the market and my understanding of what it takes to recruit somebody today may not necessarily be the person you called yesterday. It's probably more likely to be the person you've known for 6 months or a year or longer. And just understanding the process of recruitment, if you're an experienced agency recruiter, I think brings a tremendous amount of value to the table. And of course, you know, cracking communication skills and written skills don't hurt either.
No, absolutely. And that's what differentiates you and some of the great agency recruiters from the rest, because I'll tell you, there's a lot of others who don't have that value prop or don't maybe even know how to articulate it in the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I've trained a lot of recruiters as well. And the number one thing that I try and teach young recruiters is you can't sell anything to anybody before you've established a need. So you better do a good job of getting to know your candidate before you tell them how perfect the role is that you want them to consider. And I think a lot of recruiters still get it the wrong way around. I think they get on the phone and they start telling people how perfect the role is before they fully understand the journey that that person is on and where they could effectively go next, and then missing the chance of reconciling their role quite perfectly with the right candidates.
Absolutely. And now we circle back a little bit to Glassdoor, right? Glassdoor is just one example of making sure that the candidate is fully informed, because we don't want to sell a bag of goods, right? There's a couple of things, right? It's like fully informed candidate plus realistic job preview in the interview process, but really making sure that that role is the right role for someone and then being strong enough to pull back and say, I don't think this is the right role for you. Or based on all the conversations we're having, you might not fit into this culture, right? Based on the things that you're saying to me and the signals that I'm hearing, and giving the person a chance to humanely self-select out of the process.
Right. And that's a very powerful way of recruiting, because it shows that you actually care and that you're not just trying to push square pegs into round holes or transact a candidate for the sake of either a fee or a placement on your metrics sheet. And I think that's what really strong candidates are wary of these days, is they don't want to be transacted. They want to have mature and in-depth conversations about what the opportunity truly offers both parties. And getting back to culture, they want to understand what the culture is. And here's something that's only of recent years, which certainly wasn't part of the equation back in the day. They want to talk about mission. They want to talk about values. And those are things that have really only sort of crept up in the last sort of 5 or 6 years, I'd say.
No, absolutely. And it's really funny, because I just came from a very strong mission-driven culture, and I am now looking first and foremost for a mission-driven company.
Good for you. Let's start to think about wrapping up. But I'd like to know, and I think anybody who is a recruiter who might be listening to this, who might either be recently furloughed, laid off, or worried about their job, how are you going about finding a job as a very seasoned leader in the recruitment industry? What are you doing to make that happen? And, you know, how do you feel about your progress so far?
So I'm going to step back just a little bit. My story might be a little different than others, but I will say that when I first had these conversations with my team about our recs getting put on hold, I counted that this was my fourth downturn that I've been through in the Bay Area. So I was through the dot-com and all the aftershocks of that, through September 11th, through the housing crisis of 2008, and then now going through it with COVID. And even though some of those meant that there were layoffs or company closing, things like that, I was always hiring during that time. And that made me feel good. It also made me make different choices at certain times of like making sure that I was always marketable, making sure that I was always a hands-on recruiter during downturns, so that I could always get a job. And I think now I might be a little different than others because I feel more comfortable in my skills after all of these times. So that's why I haven't been telling anyone that I'm looking for a job and sort of just working my network, as you mentioned earlier, which is always the first place you should go is to your network. But I think it's so important to just be thoughtful about what you want to do and what will make you happy, because that's the job that you should go for. So don't take the first job that comes up. Write on a piece of paper what you want and what you don't want. Do your research. Really make sure that you're picking the right role. And maybe take a consulting project in the meantime if you really have to pay the bills, right? But don't sign on to a full-time job that's not the right job for you just to do it. Have that a little bit of patience in the process and know that it'll pay off. Great recruiters will always have jobs.
That's good to hear. Do you think there's much point in sitting on LinkedIn and applying for job after job after job and just click to apply? Is that getting people anywhere right now?
I'm not a huge fan of that. I always think you should work your network. And so go out, look for jobs, see who's connected. I think that's one of the really, really great things that LinkedIn is good for is seeing who you know at those companies and doing your research. And then, as you mentioned, you know, 30-minute phone calls are the thing that we do. You and I had one not too long ago after all of this was happening. And just connect with your network. They will get you jobs.
That's extremely good advice. And the other thing, which I'm starting to sort of own a bit better than I ever have before. I've been aware of this for years and I've been lazy, but I think raising your profile on LinkedIn by sharing, creating videos. I created a video a couple of weeks ago. It was just a few thoughts for my agency friends on how to execute outreach right now. And I got a tremendous response from that and thousands of people watching it. And I think you need a trail of sort of credibility on LinkedIn as well. Rather than just sort of looking for a job, you know, add some value to LinkedIn. I think it can't hurt. And if you're not comfortable on video, then write an article or share articles, but keep your name out there, because every time you comment on somebody else's article or create an article of your own or a video, then your network gets to see you and they remember your name. And if you've made a smart remark or a smart comment, their estimation of you is going to increase, right?
I am so grateful as well for my time at Glassdoor because they allowed me to do webinars and podcasts and write articles and exactly what you're saying to get out there and be seen as a thought leader. And I am so grateful for that and want to continue it. So I also appreciate that you asked me to do this with you, which has been really, really fun.
Thank you. No, it has been a lot of fun. And we haven't got time to go into everything that I'd love to talk to you about. So parting sort of thoughts, words of wisdom, you know, what does the future hold for our industry right now? And what are you looking forward to?
I think it's such an interesting time. I have just been so fascinated by learning about return to work through COVID. We still have no idea exactly how long this is all going to be, but it'll certainly change the shape of recruiting. I'm super excited about what this means for distributed teams and remote hiring. I think that we will make it through this. You know, we don't know exactly how long it will take, but keeping our heads up and being optimistic and continuing to push forward through this is going to be really important. And it'll just be really, really interesting to see what types of companies can be really successful through this. And we might have to reframe and refocus a little bit, but we'll get through it all.
Yeah, undoubtedly, there's going to be a lot of new opportunities that arise, a lot of refocusing of companies to look at what's really important right now. The concept of working remotely finally has been put to the test. It's something that I have been rallying for years, especially on behalf of recruiters. I've said to a lot of employers recently, flexibility, in other words, being able to work from home a couple of days a week, is the new annual bonus. It's what recruiters want to do, and they can do so very effectively. And it's about time that mature employers measured their employees and their teams by productivity and not by the amount of hours they spend in the office. And so that's a cultural change that's taking place right in front of our eyes right now. And it's very interesting to watch.
I love it.
So let's wrap it up. Thank you so much, Julie Kakulas. It's been a real pleasure and a lot of fun. Good luck to you. And thank you so much for spending this time talking to me this morning.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode with me and the fabulous Julie Kakulas. I would love to hear from you. Your feedback is so important to me. But most important of all, please subscribe to future episodes of this podcast so that I can continue to produce and deliver it to you on a weekly basis. Thank you again, and I'll see you soon. Cheers.